Since iTunes only keeps the last 100 episodes of any show, some of our show topics that seem to help the most people are no longer available when people search on iTunes. So, in an effort to make that information available to more people, from time to time we're going to re-air some of our most popular show topics. You can also go to kickitnaturally.com and search for any topic in our search box. For now, enjoy this show that originally aired in 2014.
T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kitta McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hill, author, natural health expert, producer.
Frisbee repairman.
Oh, you get a lot of business?
I get a lot of business. A lot of people come with a damaged Frisbee. And if it was your favorite Frisbee and it's broken now, you know, before me, there was no option.
Oh, okay.
I'm taking care of business.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take the Frisbee. There you have. The facts of life.
Yeah.
So to our left, we have Will Hottie Patati Schmidt, who's here with us today.
Hi.
Hi, Will. I feel like I haven't seen you in about
it's been
two
like
or 3 minutes.
All day.
Yeah. So we're doing another show on electrolyte stuff, and this is electrolyte excess.
That's too much. It's too much electrolytes.
It's too much electrolytes. They're getting a lot of light showing on them, you know, what I mean about that. Yeah. I can't talk now.
At what point is it too far just to start the show over? You never know.
Yeah, I don't know. Would you want to?
No.
All right. Well, for all of our Kick It Naturally listeners, Audio is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so you can check out their service. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook to find the link.
Audible.com.
Yep.
It's better when we don't give any context. Yeah. Just say it.
Right. I'm just going to say it throughout the show.
Uh-huh. Audible.com. So we're continuing with Kenna's brilliant idea of that we need to tackle each imbalance.
So brilliant, I'm left with nothing. I got zero. I'm done.
You're so brilliant. You spent your
spent my load.
Okay.
The year.
Well, we're done then. So what we're going to talk about now is when someone has an electrolyte excess, where you usually see that with hypertension and high blood pressure.
Why they gotta have all the electrolytes? Share some with
the why you gotta be selfish? It's called electrolyte selfish.
Mm-hmm. It's like the rich people. They don't want, it's the one percenters.
Right. You know? We need an electrolyte Robin Hood to share the wealth.
To liberate.
Uh-huh.
God.
That's our keyword today. If you call in the next 60 seconds,
I said it once, and
liberate,
Kenna just keeps beating it.
I'm going to use it in every sentence I can use it in.
Yeah. So you see this with a lot of people. They have high blood pressure. They often have high cholesterol, cardiovascular disease. They have heart attacks. They have strokes. It's not a fun thing.
But aneurysms, or are they in that?
Why not? Let them have an
really
aneurysm.
Tight ties. And
they wear
stressful.
Tight ties. They're freaked out. They're stressed. But the list that goes along with electrolyte excess doesn't come anywhere near the long list that comes with the electrolyte
but it's got
deficiency.
A couple
they can put
big
a piece of coal in their butt and it come out a diamond.
Right.
So
there's that advantage. But there's a couple big kickers they have on their list, like cardiac arrest.
Oh,
right.
Lord, that's a big one.
CBD.
There's no list that I can read really fast.
No, we didn't make one because there's just not as many things that go along with this as electrolyte deficiency.
You're not as fun.
They do get a lot of other concurrent symptoms a lot of time, though that it's not caused by electrolyte excess necessarily, but concurrently they can oftentimes hypercholesterolemia, like high cholesterol.
Type 2 diabetes.
Yeah. They have
shows
insomnia
up.
Too. I mean,
sure.
They're so amped up.
For other reasons.
Inflammation in general, like
good one.
That bulging vein.
Good answer.
The bulging vein in their forehead thing.
Uh-huh.
Go along. But most of all, heart attacks.
Yeah.
They prematurely age.
Yeah,
sure.
They do actually. They have accelerated wear and tear on their kidneys and their cardiovascular system and their heart.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of things. But the thing is, like, people are generally more aware of the problems that come with high blood pressure and electrolyte excess.
They get more press.
They get a lot more. They have much better PR.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you almost never hear anything about people with low blood pressure, other than good job.
Good job. So let's start with the basics. What kind of number, how does someone decide that they have electrolyte excess? There's too many electrolytes. Let's start with that.
Generally, if their blood pressure I'm not sure what our number is like for the systolic. I think it's over 130.
Yeah, over 130 is when you start creeping in towards the high.
Yeah.
I'm not going to call 911 if somebody has 131 over, you know, 80. But
if it's over 130 over 87, so if you're ever taking your blood pressure, you get two numbers. The systolic is the top number and the diastolic is the bottom. If the top number is greater than 130 or if the bottom number is over 87, you might be inching towards electrolyte excess high blood pressure.
And what we're looking at is that the body doesn't have the ability to excrete enough stuff to keep that number in the range where it should be.
And would you say that generally, I mean, people can fix this problem pretty quickly a lot of the time?
You know, as serious a problem as this is, it seems to be the thing that can be fixed the fastest with a large percentage of the people that are dealing with it.
Just drink more water.
I mean, I've seen...
Just drink any water. Any some
water's
of
good.
That can be a big step.
Other than like seawater.
Right.
Yeah. Or potty water.
Don't drink the ocean. But yeah, I've seen like crazy, scary high blood pressure corrected in a day.
Right.
They just started drinking water and they were scared. Like they're afraid they're going to get a heart attack.
So
their
like
blood pressure was
distilled or
it was like over. It was like around 200, which was like, is that really that high? But we checked it out a couple of times. It was crazy high. And then they lost 13 pounds in a week. Like and their blood pressure normalized in like a day.
So let's come back to that too. Let's talk about some of the things that make this number higher so that people can understand not only what they did to bring it down, but why that would bring it down.
Yeah. Okay.
So when we're looking at a blood pressure number, what's the stuff in the blood that makes that number higher or lower?
Sugar, salt, water, proteins, and filth like toxins and metabolic debris.
Right. And when you say salts, that could be a lot of things.
Any sorts of electrolytes. There's
minerals
and... Yeah. Like all the different sort of electrolytes that are supposed to be in our body are electrolytes like calcium, magnesium, potassium, sodium, manganese, you know, that whole little...
Right. It's a long list. Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff. And I think that when blood pressure is high, there's three or four main things that are usually one of those factors is... the underlying cause, or maybe a few of them are all kind of contributing to that. So the first one is what Kenna mentioned, like, hey, what if you drank some water? What if you did that?
Mm. I'm brilliant twice today.
I know. Because you talk to people and you're like, okay, well, you know, how much water did you drink today? And they'll be like, well, I had two cups of coffee this morning. And they don't understand that coffee is not water. They view coffee because it has water in it. They used water to make it, so they
tea
think that counts.
Tea for lunch, tea for dinner.
And then I had three Cokes.
Yeah.
So the important thing is that, first of all, a person has to drink actual water, because anything that you're drinking that's liquid, that's not water, has something else in it that's going to contribute to that burden that the body is already dealing with.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the main reasons why this imbalance is corrected so easily is because there's a really fundamental law of physics on your side if you drink water. Like, it's called diffusion, where if you drink pure water, like reverse osmosis or distilled water, where it doesn't have a lot of minerals, or even just like tap water compared to your blood, is going to be lower in lower amount of sediment in it. And when you put that in your mouth and drink it, then the area of higher concentration sediment, like your very thick electrolyte excess blood, can then diffuse electrolytes and other sediment into the lower concentration fluid of the water you drank, and then you can pee it out.
So even to look at it on a more extreme, if your car is covered with mud, you can wash that mud off with water, because the mud will join with that water and wash away. But if you try and wash your car with smashed up chocolate chip cookies, it's not going to be as effective.
Why would you waste those cookies?
Yeah. And it gets more dirt.
Right. And then kids are running up and they're licking your car, and and there's signs of you on the trees around town. It's not what you want to do. You want to put actual water in there so that it has the ability to wash away junk. If you're putting water in that already contains junk, it doesn't have as much room to attract other junk to it.
Yeah. So drinking more pure water is the first step of what you want to do if you have electrolyte excess.
Right, because if you're a person that drinks water normally, it's very common for someone to not hardly drink any water the entire day. They're just drinking other garbage, mm-hmm. even if that. So that's a big deal. Is hey, drink something. And the next thing is...
Vodka doesn't count.
Nope.
No, vodka doesn't count. Where's the water going? I think that can be another big problem.
Yeah. So you want to help the kidneys, like, filter all that sediment out. And more water is going to do that. But you also got to make sure that water is actually going through the kidneys. So just as we saw on the flip side, and when we talked about last episode with the electrolyte deficient person... They can often be in an imbalance called an anabolic state where they're peeing out too much water. In this imbalance, it can oftentimes have a flip side issue where they're maybe too catabolic and too much of the water they're consuming is going out their colon. So when they drink more water, they start to get diarrhea and loose stools. And they're like, oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
And there's not really that much water going through their bladder. So they're not able to filter their blood as effectively if you're in this catabolic state.
And they may even figure this out subconsciously. They may not even, when you ask them, they're like, you know what? When I drink a lot of water, I do get diarrhea. And they may not even, have connected the dots until you ask them. But a lot of people figure out things like, oh, when I eat this, I feel lousy. So they just kind of start to gravitate away from that. And drinking water can be one of those things.
Yeah.
So someone being overly catabolic, which you can learn about what that is in any of our books or the 4-week course, or we'll be doing a show on that probably in the next couple of weeks. But if your body is pushing too much water in the wrong direction, it could not only restrict your body's ability to remove filth, but the diarrhea behavior may kind of push you towards not drinking as much water. So it could cause two problems, really.
Mm-hmm. So that's another thing.
Yeah, that's a big one. When we look at probably the most common thing, then why it's so easy to fix, is blood sugar is part of that formula. And a lot of people that have high blood pressure are eating a lot of carbs and not processing them correctly, or they're insulin resistant, and what happens to the carbs when they're insulin resistant?
Yeah, I mean, this creates a really compounding problem when we look at like cholesterol also, but those sugars, they're one thing that adds pressure to the bloodstream, so we see a high blood pressure with just from the sugars, but then the sugars also electromagnetically and chemically attract electrolytes to stay suspended in the blood. So that will add more to the blood pressure just from the sugars being there. More of your salts will be retained, so you'll see greater blood pressure on both of those counts. And then on top of that, that sugar staying in the system creates elevated insulin levels, which creates a lot of free radical damage, and the body will then respond to that situation by creating more low-density lipids, which is known as the bad cholesterol. It's not actually bad. It's restorative, and it's trying to put out this fire that this elevated insulin and glucose is causing. But that cholesterol, that it adds even more to the pressure in the circulatory system as it sort of forms like a spackle on the cardiovascular system in the walls and like in the veins and capillaries and arteries. And we'll see as it tries to heal from the damage of the free radical activity from the insulin and the glucose, it forms this spackle and creates a smaller space for the blood to be in throughout the circulatory system. And that smaller space creates a higher pressure center, because now that blood has less room to be in and it creates more pressure on the walls. So we'll see elevated glucose or elevated blood pressure even higher from that.
So and look at it this way, because a lot of people are like, well, I eat the same amount of carbs as my wife and she has low blood pressure. And so it's more about how long does it take your body to process the sugar? So let's say that somebody eats a sandwich every meal. And those breads turn to glucose in the bloodstream. And now you have, let's just say, 80 glucoses. That's not even a real word.
Glucoses.
Glucounits. we're just making up things to give you an example here. So let's just say you got 80. And
glucai.
Yeah, glucai. Glucagon. So if you're insulin resistant, the cells are not as receptive to the insulin, so the insulin has a hard time getting the sugar into the cell so that it can be used for fuel or stored or whatever. So if you have 80 glucose units and your body can only, you know, move 10 of them to where they need to be, then the blood sugar starts to accumulate and it kind of hangs around in there, and it hangs around in there longer. So then the next meal rolls around and you have another sandwich. You get 80 more glucose units.
Oh my gosh.
So now you got like 150 glucose units and your body can only use 10 or whatever. So not only are you getting this accumulation of sugar over time, but all of those sugars are attracting, they're pulling calcium out of the tissue and holding the calcium in the bloodstream. So now there's a lot more mineral coming. So everything's just getting thicker.
Yeah.
And it just kind of keeps going that direction until, a la peanut butter sandwiches, the guy's type 2 diabetic.
Yeah.
And he has a fasting blood sugar of 250.
Right. It's all bad.
Yeah, all that stuff is bad.
Yeah.
I'm glad we agree about this.
We didn't fight again today.
Double no fight.
On top of that, too, they feel lousy because the glucose isn't going to energy. It's not, the cells aren't getting that. And their body's not effectively metabolizing fats either, because all that insulin in the bloodstream is telling the body to focus on burning sugar. But the cells aren't getting the sugar. So there's just this huge energy deprivation.
So not only is there an energy deprivation, but there's a, hey, I'm hungry. Yes, yeah. I just had a whole bag of Doritos an hour ago, but I'm starving because that sugar that they ate never shows up to where it needs to go. So the body's like, can I have some more?
Yeah.
So they kind of continually start to pound this stuff, and the whole situation gets worse. So when it's this issue, this can turn around real fast by the person just changing what they're eating.
Yeah.
And when they do that successfully, that blood pressure could come down real fast.
Yeah. I've seen super high elevated blood sugar drop the next day. As soon as they stop putting in carbs that their body couldn't use, their blood sugar was like back in a normal range. It's not always that fast, but it's usually pretty fast.
Yeah. And so when you compound that with, hey, I'm going to drink some water too, all of a sudden, those are some pretty big moves that can kind of magnify each other.
Now I'm starting to want to be electrolyte excess.
Yeah, because it's easy.
Yeah, it's an easy problem.
But it's not always easy, and there are some other issues. So let's look at one of them is filth. And when the bloodstream is thick with filth, it's usually, not always, but usually because bile is not flowing very well. So when the liver filters junk out and puts it in the bile to be removed from the body, the bile's too thick to flow correctly, so the junk never leaves. It just gets refiltered back in and has to be filtered out by the liver again. Say words about that, Will Schmidt.
If you're filthy, like you might...
Filthy person. Right. Filthy mind.
I mean, there's a couple things you can do to check and see, like, if this is contributing to your problem. There's these fancy dipsticks that you can pee on that can detect the presence of, like, different things in your urine, including bilirubin or urobilogen. And if you're peeing out bilirubin or urobilogen, that's a very clear sign that your bile is not flowing the way you want it to, and it's reflux.
Sounds like redneck names. And I'm going to have to name a kid.
Bilirubin.
Bilirubin, get
urobilogen. if you can check those out. I think they're under a natural reference under rapid response 11
parameter. Right, they're not sold on natural reference, but there's a link to where you can find them on Amazon.
Yeah, you can get them on Amazon, but rapid response 11 parameter urinalysis dipsticks, I think is the long name. But you can pee on that strip and see, like, do you have bilirubin or urobilogen in your urine? And also you can see on that same strip, if your urine specific gravity is very high, that's another indication you might be too catabolic. And all of those issues can make your bile, or can be indications that your bile is not flowing out of your system the way it's supposed to. And that's the liver's favorite way to detox the body, is with bile. So all the stuff like your own cellular breakdown, as well as the waste from like garbage that might be smoking, or garbage in the food that you're eating, it's going to accumulate.
Air that you inhale, and there's lots of ways to have bad stuff in your body.
Even if you're eating a pristine diet, like your own cells, your own breakdown of your own cells, like your body has to clear that out. And it does that through bile. And if it's not getting the opportunity to flow the way that it should, then it'll reflux back in the blood, and that adds sediment to the bloodstream and makes your blood pressure higher and gets in the way of a lot of important metabolic processes.
Right. And another thing is, usually if someone starts to have a higher blood pressure, they go to the doctor and the doctor says, "You're stupid and you eat fat.
And you're
now
filthy,
stop doing that.
Filthy animal."
So the person freaks out and they cut all cholesterol out of their diet. They don't eat any fat. They're eating all this low fat, which is making them eat more carbs and raising their blood pressure even more. But the other thing it does is, if you're never consuming fat, you're not calling on bile to come play. You're not giving the body a reason to supply more bile. And as it flows less and less from the less and less amount of fat that you're consuming, it starts to get even thicker and flow even less. So it's kind of like you got to use it or lose it kind of a situation.
The other bad thing that they might do is start eating a lot of unsaturated fats, because they were told that that was a good idea, right? So those fatty acids, like fish oils and the essential fatty acids and flaxseed and olive oil even.
Or even margarine. There's, you know, still people promoting things like, I can't believe it's not butter.
I can't believe they're doing that.
Right.
So, but even like your doctor may very well say, oh, you need more omega-3, like take fish oil capsules. And the huge problem for a person with this imbalance already present is, if you're already catabolic and your bile isn't flowing well, the worst thing you can do is eat more fatty acids, because it's going to make you way more catabolic, which will make your cells break down faster, which contributes to the amount of bilirubin you're producing, which makes your bile even sludgier, and that makes it even harder to eliminate waste. So it's just going to totally push you in the wrong direction.
Right. So, you know, we teach in our books and courses how to thin the bile, and we'll have Will talk about some of those things, but the fact is that when you see all these compounding factors that are making things worse, and these compounding factors are the norm today. These are the steps that people are told to take, and you can see how all of them make it worse, and they all, it's not like adding to each other, it's like multiplying against each other. So by the time that's been going on for a few years, and you want to try and thin out your bile so it flows better, you may have to do a lot. It may not be easy. Like, some people can just use a beet flow supplement and maybe, you know, do a beet flow flush and they're golden. But some people need to do a lot of things. So what kind of steps can be taken to...
Yeah, this is really important, and it's not always easy. Like, they may have to redo the beet flow flush a lot. They may want to go to, like, more intense remedies, like coffee suppositories and coffee enemas can be very powerful things that can help the bile flow better. There's other suppositories we don't talk about a lot called, like, glitamins, combine some of the nutrients that your body uses to make bile. But you want to be eating the things that help your bile, that help your body make healthy bile, like cholesterol-rich foods. You want to stop eating foods that are getting in the way of your bile production, like fatty acids or hydrogenated fats. And you want to keep doing these remedies like beet flow and coffee enemas and coffee suppositories until you have resolution, until, like, your bile flow starts to improve. By there's different ways you can see that. One, like those urine dipsticks, like if you can clear out the presence of bilirubin or urobilogen, that's a really great sign.
Right, so you can monitor. You can look, okay, am I going in the right direction? I did this dipstick test. It showed that my bilirubin was 2 or 3 blocks up higher than it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
So I can mark that on a calendar or somewhere. And then I can take steps to improve it. And then I can actually use that marker to know, am I going in the right direction or not?
Yeah. Another marker is your saliva pH. A lot of times when people have poor bile flow or poor bile production, their saliva pH will be really low. Like, it should be up around 7 or 6.8. But a lot of times if your bile is messed up, it'll be down around like 6,
yeah,
6.2. So that's a good sign. You can look at your saliva pH the day after you do something like a beet flow flush, and hopefully you'll see it come up. Even if your digestion isn't perfect, or if you're still feeling like bloated or gassy, if you can see those markers start to improve, you know you're doing something right that's working.
Right, and this is a big problem. And if somebody starts drinking a lot of water and they greatly, greatly reduce their carbohydrates improve digestion so that they're not having uric acid overload, urea is very high, thickening up everything, and they still have high blood pressure, it's almost always that the bile just has not moved yet. It hasn't started moving yet, and they need to do more. So the BeatFlow we talk about is a supplement we get from Empirical Labs that is just very rich in beet greens. And that seems to be what thins out the bile the best. And then do you want to explain how a coffee suppository works kind of from a different angle to help get that flow?
Yeah. So when we look at like the problem of bile flow, the beet greens work directly on the bile by helping the bile itself to be more liquidy and less sludgy. But the coffee enemas and coffee suppositories that you can do work in a very different way, where they dilate the biliary pathway, which means they chemically signal the pathway that the bile is supposed to flow through. That pathway gets opened up more by the coffee. It's not like a colonic where the goal is to like fire
wash
hose
it all out,
right?
Yeah.
It's a biochemical thing that happens from the stimulus of the coffee to cause that dilation to occur.
And drinking coffee does not do the same thing.
Doesn't get you in the same spot.
Right.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't help.
Drinking coffee? No.
If you're a health, fitness, or nutrition professional, check out our other podcast, Six Figure Health Pro. We dig into the latest marketing techniques and business growing strategies for health professionals. To learn how to take your business to the next level, search for Six Figure Health Pro on iTunes or Stitcher, or go to sixfigurehealthpro.com to learn more. Now do what you're told.
But just stopping salt for a while, because it's a high mineral,
you know,
and you're already excessed.
One thing that you want to look at with salt, because that's the first thing they tell you, is you need to go on a low sodium diet. And there's a difference between sodium and sea salt.
Yeah.
So sodium chloride is table salt. Mm-hmm. There's usually some iodine in there. But when you look at sea salt, it's all of these other minerals. And what we see a lot is that when someone with high blood pressure uses an unrefined salt, like real salt or some type of sea salt, that their blood pressure can come down if they don't do anything else. And what it seems to happen is, like if you take ascorbic acid because somebody told you to take vitamin C, it's just a fraction of the vitamin C compound. It's not everything your body needs to repair things. So when you take that, the body takes that fraction of C and it pulls all the other cofactors that it has stored in the body, combines it with that, and says, now I can use it. And after a couple of weeks, most people run out of those cofactors, and taking that vitamin C fraction becomes useless to them in a vitamin C context, unless they're using it for other purposes like we do sometimes. But if you look at salt, if it's just that sodium chloride ion that a person's getting in a lot of, the body can't really use it and it starts to accumulate. But if you give all the other nutrients and cofactors needed to use those minerals, all of a sudden the body can use them, utilize them, and wash away what it doesn't need, and their blood pressure seems to come down. So that's one possibility going on. And that's why even if someone has high blood pressure, I won't say, you know, stay away from salt. I'll just be, you know, don't use table salt. You want to monitor your blood pressure. You want to take the other steps to improve it. But using an unrefined salt could be one of those things that helps it come down.
I'm just here to set you up, Tony.
Right. Mm-hmm. That was a good layup.
Yeah.
But you also want to look at, like, what is making the blood, like, retentive of the electrolytes. So when you look at elevated insulin levels, we'll see that causes the bloodstream to be more calcium and chloride and sodium retentive. So when you're eating carbohydrates and your insulin levels are way up high, it creates this elevated alkaline electrolyte retention. So you'll see hypertension result from that. But you can see that resolve by, like, when you get the insulin and blood sugar levels to come down, you can still be eating plenty of this natural sea salt and your blood pressure be totally normal because you don't have that hormone of the insulin in there causing the retention.
So stop with table salt, have a good high-grain sea salt, but stop with the sugars.
Yeah.
Right. Let's do a few questions before we get too deep.
Cool. Oh, and if you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's courses for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for our coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com. All right, Anna, this will be very interesting. I struggle to keep my electrolytes in check. Fred from North Hollywood, California. What's the fastest way to bring down blood pressure if someone goes way too high all of a sudden?
Like the first thing, you know, is why did it go real high? You know, maybe they're not monitoring it, and maybe the last time they checked was 6 months ago, and so now today is all of a sudden, but it's been going high for 6 months.
Yeah.
But... you know, the things that we talked about really are the fastest ways to straighten some things out.
Yeah. It'll come down. I've never not seen it come down really quick when someone drinks a lot of pure water and cuts out carbs.
Just start chugging it.
It'll, like, if you cut out your carbohydrates and you drink a lot of pure water, like, almost always I'd see a massive drop in your blood pressure really pretty quickly.
And here's one thing that can really help a lot is to... drink a lot of water right when you wake up, because after you start eating, a lot of the water that we drink kind of goes towards a lot of these functions and making a lot of things happen. But that first thing in the morning before we've eaten anything, a lot of that water can go towards washing out filth, and that can be very helpful in that regard.
When you said to drink water in the morning, so the opposite for electrolyte excess, so the opposite would be true for like an electrolyte deficient, like don't drink a glass of water in the morning, hold your mineral in there with that, or, you know, definitely not the diuretic right in the morning, because then you're just getting rid of all of it.
Right,
you could
so that
be holding it in.
That could count too, but an electrolyte deficient person would never want to drink a huge pound of water like that, like we're saying to do for the electrolyte excess person.
Yeah. But especially in the morning.
But yes, in the morning, that could magnify
probably,
it.
Yeah, okay.
Let's do next question.
Tim from New Hampshire. Are there other ways beyond blood pressure to know if electrolytes are too high?
Yes. Next question. So if you're a coach and you have some more advanced equipment, there are some things that you can look at. But even at home... Will, do you want to explain the resting to standing pulse thing and an indication that that...
Yeah, if you have your own blood pressure monitor, they usually also track your pulse at the same time. So you can do this thing where you take your blood pressure at first, laying down, like lay down totally flat, like on your couch with your legs uncrossed, just straight. Lay there for like a minute, then take your blood pressure and your pulse, write it down. And then as you stand up, press the button again to measure your blood pressure. And it will tell you your standing blood pressure and pulse. And if your pulse changes more than 12 points in the process of standing up, then that's another indicator that, oh, you might be dealing with an electrolyte imbalance. And if your blood pressure is high, like over 130, over 87, then it's likely that that imbalance is in the direction of an excess.
Right. So that it's just a jump from... if there's a difference between the two pulse readings from resting to standing, if it's greater than 12, it's kind of a confirmation that, yes, there's a problem. And that problem can exist in either the deficiency direction or the excess direction. So that's another pretty good test that someone can do. You can also look at blood sugar, and if it's really high, you know that that's causing part of the high blood pressure, and that can be a confirmation of, okay, I do have a problem because I know the sugar's high, so that's going to be making the blood pressure higher. Two.
Mm-hmm. Celia, what if I feel better after fixing digestion and such, but my blood pressure isn't coming up?
Oh, she must have been from the electrolyte deficiency one.
Oh.
I probably put it in the wrong one. So we did talk about that when we talked about electrolyte deficiency. So we can skip that one, I think.
Skip right. Previous episode.
Go to the previous episode, Celia. Right.
But let's talk a little bit about blood pressure meds. Because that's a big deal, because most people that you see that are on, you know, if you're listening to this because you have high blood pressure, there's a good chance that you're on meds. So it's important to understand what they're doing and how that's going to affect any attempt that you make to improve your situation.
Yeah, and this is where it's really important to to monitor your own chemistry, because if you start doing these things that we're talking about that can help correct an electrolyte excess, your body can respond really quickly and your blood pressure can come down really quickly. But if you're taking a blood pressure medication that's designed to lower your blood pressure and you do these right steps that lowers your blood pressure is going to get too low. And I've seen clients that, like, they've been taking blood pressure medications for a decade because they were told that was a good idea, and their blood pressure is just low to begin with. It's like around 100 over 70 something, and they got on anxiety meds,
right?
Because they're like freaking out and they didn't realize that their low blood pressure was contributing to that. So now they're on medications that push their blood pressure down and up.
Right. So it's like driving around your car with your foot slammed on the gas and the brake at the same time.
Yeah.
And your neighbors are looking at you and pointing.
Yeah.
So the thing to understand about blood pressure medications is their job is not to balance blood pressure. Their job is to push it down. So wherever it is, that medication is going to push it down further synthetically. It's going to force it lower by doing the magic that it does. So we see a lot of people that are on the meds, and then they do these steps. They start drinking more water. They reduce their carbs. They improve digestion and bile flow, and the body starts cleaning junk out. And their blood pressure goes way low, and they start to get dizzy, or they're depressed, and all kinds of stuff like that. So it's real important to understand what's happening and to work with your doctor to figure out, okay, what number do I reduce the dose of my med, or how do I do that? You know, you have to talk with your doctor to figure that out. And it's real important to get a cuff so that you can watch what's going on. Because that's exactly what happens. It's so common to, if someone's been on antidepressants for a long time, by now it's very common that they're now on blood pressure lowering meds too. If someone's been on blood pressure lowering meds for a very long time, it's very common that somebody eventually put them on antidepressants, because the antidepressants have the ability to raise blood pressure by holding mineral in the system, and they use it for so long their blood pressure goes high. And the doctor's like, oh, well, you have high blood pressure. We have to give you a blood pressure med. They don't even understand that they caused that by giving them the antidepressant.
Messed up.
Yeah, messed up. So looking back over the steps to take, what if somebody tries to drop carbs, but then they have too many cravings or they're nauseous from trying to eat proteins and fats?
Yeah, so you have to understand, like, your body has gotten into this situation probably for out of necessity. Like, you may not have just decided you wanted to become addicted to carbohydrates, and so
right,
you just eat those only. It was probably because, like, maybe your body wasn't processing the proteins and fats well in the first place, and just gravitated to carbohydrates out of necessity, because that was the only thing you could get energy from, and it made you feel better at the time. So the process of really, like, fixing this overall situation may be a longer road of actually correcting your digestion, so that your body can actually use proteins and fats for fuel and not be so over-reliant on carbohydrates, and restoring your body's ability to process carbohydrates also. And that may take a little bit of time. So you may be able to shift the numbers significantly initially, but for a new diet to really work and for the person to feel great on it, you may need to, like, do that hard work of actually restoring proper digestion to your system.
Right. Removing or adding the ability to use other fuels so that you do have the ability to start cutting these carbs to bring the blood pressure down and the blood sugar down and all those issues. So just because you've tried it didn't work before doesn't mean you can't do it. It's not a willpower issue. It's a give your body other fuel it can use so it doesn't need this garbage. So let's review what we learned.
Okay. So some of the main steps that you'll want to take, most likely if you are electrolyte deficient, are to drink
electrolyte excess,
more pure water, like reverse osmosis or distilled water, so that your kidneys can help filter out a lot of those salts and electrolytes. Reducing your carbohydrate intake also, so that your blood sugar levels can come down, and with that your blood insulin and all that making steps to correct a catabolic imbalance if you are in one. So reducing fatty acid consumption and eating more saturated fats, which is the total opposite of what people will tell you normally.
Right. And if that freaks you out, then listen to our dietary fat episode or our cholesterol episode.
Yeah.
So you can ketogenic diet episode.
Yeah, that one's good too. But it'll help you understand that why that fiction came about and how it's been proven hundreds of times now to be false, but it's still in the mainstream.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that point alone, like, that may be a big stumbling block for a lot of people because they've been told the opposite for so long by so many people, including their doctor. But there's a really good book called The Truth About Cholesterol, Cholesterol Clarity.
Cholesterol Clarity. Anymore,
as well as a bunch of excellent articles by Ray Peet on fatty acids and cholesterol and that sort of stuff. You go to raypeet.com. But it may take some more convincing for you to believe that fatty acids like olive oil and flaxseed oil and fish oils and that can actually be making the situation worse. But they are.
Right.
Yeah.
And bile flow is super important, making sure that you thin that out so that it can move. So if you don't have a blood pressure cuff, that's an error. Get one because it's $50 or something, and it could make this whole a lot easier just by monitoring what you're doing. Graph it out. There's things on the Coalition. If you're on there, there's great graphs. You can actually get a visual of what your progress is. But if not, just use some journal or something and monitor your numbers and adjust as they change, and you'll get there. This is something that we just see so much success, and it seems easy.
Yeah.
For most people, not all, but most.
Yeah. If you do the work of drinking more water, correcting your digestion, and then lowering your carbohydrate intake, you're probably going to respond really, really well and quickly.
Okay, I'm done with all you.
Yeah, done with
all that. Right. Yeah. If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com, or you can go over to Will Schmidt's mybodyofknowledge.net, and he's got a lot of great blogs on there and exercises. He also has a Facebook page, My Body of Knowledge. And if you want to be a health coach, go to healthprocourse.com to learn more about how to become a health coach.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.